Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today, my guest is Miss Susan Ekstrom. Hey, Miss Susan, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I am great. And we're talking to you all the way from Sweden. That's on my
Yes.
bucket list. But just so people can know you, I'm going to go ahead and read your bio. So Susan Ekstrom is an entrepreneur coaching CEOs worldwide in building their companies better tomorrow. In the last 5 years, she has helped them increase their profits by more than $30 million. Susan lives in Gothenburg, Sweden. She is on day 661 of her running streak, and she is a single mom of two fantastic sons. For Susan's youngest, who has ADHD and autism, life hasn't really worked out until recently. He has only been at home, not going out at all, not attending school for the last 4 years. Now, finally, this August, he moved to a boarding school and he's restarting his life again, and she is so proud of him. Out of the work Susan does for her clients, combined with standing for her son and getting the help and support he needs, she has created her life mission, having a world that works for everyone within a company, within a school, or anywhere in life. In the dot-com period, Susan was one of the owners of a huge Swedish.com. In 2001, they had to file for bankruptcy, and she has spent the last 20 plus years after that helping her clients so they don't have to go through what she went through. That sounds wonderful because, running a company is not easy, and people definitely want to avoid that. So thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so tell me about you. Like, how did you start out and how did you get to doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I started up out in the IT world in the 90s, and I came across this company where I w became one of the main owners, and we build like really great stuff, but we were like 10 years ahead of time. So we had during the dot-com, we had a lot of investors, and we grew the company in 10 different countries. And I moved from Sweden, for example, to the Netherlands to build that office there. And when the stock market crashed in the beginning of 2001, not 2021, we started to get in trouble because our investors didn't want to keep on paying us more money, and we hadn't enough revenue to go by ourselves. So we had to file for bankruptcy, and that was a really, really tough period for me. I was pretty young, and this was my like really first company that, and I was heavily invested with both energy and time and money and yeah, everything. Well, it was my life, so to speak, during that period. But I realized that we made a couple of epic failures, and we didn't set up to scale successfully. And we didn't delegate in a way that was effective. And we also, as management, we stopped listening to our people. So we took a lot of decision, made a lot of decisions without getting the proper information beforehand. And we also di we didn't have processes that helped us so that we would be efficient and productive in our work. So there were a couple of really huge failures that we did, and but of course mostly it was because that our investors didn't give us more money, provide us with more money. But still, we were really, really, really profitable and successful beforehand. We started to build this. Yes. So after that, I really wanted to help companies to be productive, efficient, and having a company culture that's align with the vision and the strategies so that you could do fun things and you could actually be successful and also have a nice revenue and profits and build a prosperous company in any industry or size or part of the world. So that's what I've been doing for pretty much 20 years, and in the last 6 years I've done it in my own company. And I'm working both as a management consultant, but now I'm transitioning to be more of a CEO coach to help CEOs with the company revenue of between 8 and $20 million, somewhere around that, to mainly do three things, and that's freeing up their time so that they can strategize and work on their business instead of being stuck in it, because many CEOs in this company size, they are still really involved in the day-to-day operation of the company. And if you want to grow, you need to elevate and stop being in the business all the time. So that's one thing we always start with, to free up time. And for a CEO like this, his or her hourly value is like $2,000. And to free up 8 hours a week to be working on much more money-making activities and strategic projects, that can easily like 2 to 3x that value in like 90 days or something. So that's a really interesting part to look at first. And then after we do that, we go into and look at the how we can utilize their company's potential for greater productivity and profitability. And that means to for many people, get out of their office and start talking and listening to their people for real. So I'm usually saying that wear your large ears to work and ask questions and listen to the answers, not just listen to reply or listen to protect your strategy, for example. So really listen to what they are saying, because they meet the customers, they know what works internally, they know what doesn't work. So they have a lot of ideas and issues and bottlenecks to give you, so that you can help them do their work more successfully, and then they will go that extra mile for you. And so that's how you build a company culture that are positive to continuous improvements, for example. And then we also look at the business model to set up a scalable business model, so that you can either do more with what you already have, so you can be more profitable, for example, with the people that you have in your company, or that we can set up a structure, both organizational structure, but also processes, for example, so that you can scale and grow without having a lot of issues during the way. Because when you grow, often people stop talking to each other. You build like silos within the company that forms their own like company culture, and there will be a lot of irritations and frustrations between parts of the company. And the salespeople might sell things that the production, for example, can't deliver with profit because they have to do a lot of adjustments. So there could be a lot of different structural issues when you grow, apart from the cultural issues as well. So that's what I pretty much do. So I help the CEO with these three areas: to free up time, to utilize the company potential for greater productivity and profitability, and also to build a scalable business model. Yeah.
Wonderful. And, big companies need that because it's one thing to start a business. There's problems or issues there or challenges, but then it seems like at every mark, over the million mark, there's like a hurdle to go over to get in the mindset in the systems, and then 2 million or 3 million. As you go up, everything kind of changes, and you have to change your mindset, you have to change your processes, and just keep going with that scaling. And if you've never done it before, it's great to have someone like you that knows what to do.
Yes, and for of course for every CEO there are different challenges or different opportunities, but in general there are many things that are the same for a company in this kind of size. So a lot with both the structural part and the cultural part that often are not aligned at all time because you grow in different areas and it's hard to balance everything while you're growing. So that's my speciality, if you could say that.
Yes. So I want to go back to your just personal story. So,
Yeah.
you had that crash in 2001, and then but then you moved on and were doing something new. And so, when was it that you had your children, and how did that all start, and how did you fit that into your life? Because whenever someone has a child that has more needs than in normally. That's a whole nother way of having to organize, having to change life. So how did you kind of put that together with your what you do in business and also taking care of your children?
Having a child with ADHD and autism takes motherhood to a completely different level than usual. I got my kids 2005 and 2006, and at first there was I didn't see any disabilities or any problems with my youngest son. Until he was like 10, 11, somewhere around that, when in the preteen, and I realized that he couldn't read, or he couldn't read as well as the other, though he was behind in lot of areas that started to show, because before that he could get away with it, and life was still pretty easy for a kid in that age. But when the preteens start and they are trying to come to terms with who they are and who they want to be and everything, and they are like challenging each other, and then he didn't understand anymore how this social game worked, and he started to get behind in school. And then I talked to the health care, so they did this I don't know if you call that investigation in English, but so then he got his first he got the ADHD when he was 11, I think. And then we started to try a lot of medical treatment for him, but nothing worked. So then I started to think, could it be something more? So then we did another investigation, and then he also got this diagnosis of autism. And autism isn't something that you can treat with medicine or do anything like about. It's like more within the core of that person, you have the autism, but the ADHD is like this doctor explained to me, like it's more like a layer that you can actually treat with medication. Yes, so he got that, but and that was also during COVID, and He had teachers that couldn't be in school anymore because they were old. They were retired teachers because he was in a much smaller group of students, and yeah. So they started homeschooling, and after that he never came back to school. So he has been home for 4 years, 4.5 years almost. And have had like only phone contact with teachers, and it's devastating as a mom to not get your son, not be able to get your son out of the house. We have this great chemistry and connection, him and I, and but still, I had to bribe him to get him out of the house. For example, if he were going to doctor or something, I need to bribe him to get there, because everything I suggested, he was just no. And yeah, so this spring I started to talk with the school and with the welfare and every social welfare and all the different people around my son, but were not around my son, but like I had contact with, and I said to them, we have to stop playing with my son's life. We can't just go on and pretend that everything works, because it doesn't. And I said to the school that you need to start giving him the help and support he needs, so that he can actually participate in school instead of sitting home. And then the school said, we don't have the resources. But still, it's the law, but they don't have the resources. So I took on this, like, you can call it a project, but it was like working with the school and the social welfare, but both working with my son, to motivate him to see a new way to go on in life. And so step by step, I put all the pieces together, so that my son was motivated and really wanted to move to this specialized boarding school, and also getting all the application and everything running, and being approved. So yeah, this August he moved, and it's not easy for a mom to pack all your child's stuff when he's 16 years old and move him 2 hours away from you. But yeah, it has been great, and he's developed so much, and he's like, I got my son back. He is so much more outgoing, and he goes to school, and he travels by train to come home every second week. I know it sounds like strange for any parent that doesn't have a child like this, but small steps, just going to a restaurant, ordering a pizza for himself and go home, is like huge for him. It's been a huge challenge, and it's really taking a lot of time for me, because I've had him, his father and I are divorced since many years, and so my oldest, he's like every second week here, but my youngest, he has been with me 24/7. So for the I think 5 or 6 last years. So I have done all the work, and now it's like, I'm so proud of him, and I feel like this heavy load has been lifted off my shoulders, like going and see him every day, seeing him not doing anything, and now I know also that there are people around him that knows about his situation, and they can help him in another way than I can provide or help him myself. So that's a really huge thing for me. And yeah, so and that's also something that I see both for him, but also in the companies that I work with, that not just that people with, for example, autism should be included in a company and being accepted as they are, but also this with that if you are the CEO, if you are the receptionist, if you are a technician, if you are yeah, any role that you have or any position that you have in the company, you are equally worth to that company. You just have different positions, and you need a CEO, you need a receptionist, you need people, yeah, in sales and marketing and everywhere to get that business running. And that's something that I'm really committed to work with companies on, because when you get to that stage that you treat everyone, include and treat everyone not equally, because everyone needs to be treated differently or individually, but if you get my point, like, yeah, everyone is equally worth, then you can do so much more, and everyone knows their goal, for example, and how they can participate and how they can support those goals. I work with the company and in the transportation business, and the HR asked me, but how can we in H no sorry they were not in HR, but they were yeah, paying the salaries. So she asked me, how can we support the overall goal with all these transportations that we are providing to the city? And I said, yes, you can think like this. If you don't pay the salary in time, for example, or if the salary is always wrong so that each person need to check it every time, then the people that, for example, runs the vehicles, they might be irritated because the salary is late, or so they can't pay the bills. And then there comes like a person that will as is going to travel with them and say something maybe irritated to them, and then they just snap back irritated back, instead of being like this nice driver and that will inform that person about the travel. So in that way, the whole company is like a system, and it's not stronger than its weakest part. The people paying the salaries are as important as the people running the vehicles, for example, or maintain the vehicles. And also, of course, the management who see to that everything runs smoothly each day. Everyone is equally important to a company. Yeah.
Yeah, that is so true. And that's even biblical. It talks about every part is important. The parts you think, the foot doesn't say to the hand, we don't need you. And the ear doesn't say to the eye, we don't need you, because we need all our parts. And same thing in a company, you need all your parts, otherwise something doesn't work somewhere and everything falls apart.
Yeah, that's so true.
So yes. And just asking about the parenting part again, there's a lot of people who have children that have certain needs that are different than a lot of times, or they just need more help in some areas. And I've been in that before. And any advice on advocating for your child when you're talking to people and you're trying to get your support for your child, because a lot of times you're hearing no, like you heard, no, there's no, well, yeah, it's the law, but there's no resources. So any advice on helping parents break through those times when they're hitting those walls?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first step somewhere is like it's different areas, but for me, I had a really breakthrough with my son when I started to listen to him out of his needs instead of mine. Because it's so easy as a parent that you see that this is, oh, he doesn't go to school, he must go to school or whatever it is, and see it as my goal or society goal or like the social goal that I have a son that doesn't go to school, who doesn't go to school, and that is not like accepted. So I think the first thing is to try to put yourself in your child's shoes, and if possible, to see it from their perspective instead of just your own. That can be hard, of course, because you are so involved with that person, but still, you might get new perspectives and new ways of thinking that you can start a discussion with your child from another angle instead of the angle that you usually take, and that's never working because often we do like when we do things and it doesn't work, we try to do more of that thing instead of thinking about can we, instead of do more coming from another angle, try different ways of testing to communicate. And I think that's one way to do it, to get your child more maybe positive to change or whatever it is, so that you can communicate better within the family. And I have both had the luxury and the problem with being the only parent to my child. Of course, it would have been much easier to have support from someone, but also I could make decisions on my own, what I thought was best, without having discussions with someone else who might have really, really different opinions on how to do it. But then this thing about all the communication, all the discussions you need to have with school and social welfare and treatment and everything. That is, in a situation like this, it's really hard because as in a company, you have like, we in school, we are responsible for this. And we within social welfare, we are responsible for this. And what we as parents need, or our child needs, is what's in between. What's not like within that like typical what we offer. And no one is taking any responsibility for that. So everything lands back on me as a parent to ask and ask, say, can you help me with this? No. It's not within our responsibility. Can you help me with this? No, it's not within. And they just put it back and forth. It must be the school. No, it's social welfare. And yeah, so but I've also within my work ha have had the the luxury of working with these parts as my clients. So I knew pretty much about how they work, what to do and what not to do, and what can I expect. So that was a good thing for me as well. But so that's something that I really recommend. It's like, if you are a parent like this, learn how the system works, because then you will have much more confidence when you talking to people, when you know who's responsible for what, and it's like really complex, but still there are different things you need to know so that you can have your own authority and say that this isn't true. This is your responsibility. And because often when they are these complex matters, they don't know how to solve it either, because they have might have had like two people in the last 10 years with this complex situation, for example. So yeah. But it's a jungle. It's really hard. But as a parent, you never give up on your child. So you do whatever it takes, and to learn more about how the different parts of the system works is one thing I would really recommend, so that you have more knowledge and authority in what you ask for or what you demand that they should do.
Thank you. I think that's going to be really helpful for parents in that situation because it's so easy to give up when you keep hitting walls where you go and you're bounced back and forth and things like that. So, but I wanted to go back to what you're doing with CEOs and companies. So let's just kind of go over the steps. So the first one is you're going to free time for think time. So the CEO can be actually doing thinking that promotes more income, more, community between all this department. So let's talk about that. How do you help people free up that time?
At first, we take a look at their weekly schedule, what they actually are spending, investing, or wasting their time on. And often it's like, when you're into your weekly schedule, as a CEO, for example, the days just go by, and you are not reflecting so much on how each day looks like. It's like, I have to do all these meetings, I have to do this and this and this and this, and you don't often pay attention to what it is that you're really doing. So often you are stuck in the way that you set up your weekly schedule. And there are a lot of things that you could do pretty easy to free up time. And you can also see if that person is a good in delegation, or if he or she wants to have their fingers in all the cookie jars of the company. Sort of a micromanagement a CEO, or like afraid of letting go of the control of the company. So that is often also something we work on, with how you can delegate in a way so that you both free up your time and you empower your people at the same time. Another area is, of course, meetings. There are so many meetings you can, especially 1 hour meetings, that you can pretty drastic just half, so that you can do that meeting in 30 minutes instead of 1 hour. And also often many meetings, they don't have any agenda and any purpose of why are we here and what are the outcomes. So if you cut your meetings in half, you state an agenda with the outcomes and different topics during this half hour, you can get much more done. You can have people more motivated and really really give their best during 30 minutes instead of talking around and going out in different angles that isn't within the meeting. And you come late and you spend the first 15 minutes just to talk about the last meeting. So there are many, many small things to do around meetings that can really speed up the time and also increase the productivity and the outcome the whole the result of the meeting. And you can also, for example, say that during Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we conduct all our meetings, and the rest of the work week, we don't have any meetings so that people can work on their most important tasks. So that everyone knows if we're going to have a meeting, we have it on Monday before lunch, or all the way, all Wednesdays we can are free to book meetings on Thursdays, and Tuesdays and Fridays are meeting free. So that's also something that you could pretty easily free up many half hours, and also by adjusting when you hold the meetings, you can be much more efficient in that way, both for yourself but also for your people. So yeah, so that are some areas that I look into at first, and also, for example, if you have a 1 hour meeting and you are the CEO, then it might be like, I will just attend the first 15 minutes or the last 15 minutes, because then we might make some decisions, and then I need to be participate. But the first 45 minutes could be like people are preparing and discussing and coming up with the suggested solution. So there you just free up 45 minutes. So there are huge potential in just by having some person with the objective glasses on that really look at your, what are you doing in all these meetings, for example? What are you doing here? And instead of just having half an hour here and there, you have time to grab a cup of coffee, maybe talking to someone. Instead, you can reschedule and free up like 4 hour blocks instead. And there's also one other thing with the people that says that no problem, my door is always open. That's a typical management thing to say. And instead I say, my door is always open between 2 and 4 p.m. It's like because I too need to work on my most important tasks. But my door is always open between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, instead of any time anywhere, because then you won't get anything done.
Right. It's a constant interruption.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
yeah, I like, so you have your basically working blocks, time to work. And I also love the idea of the CEO coming in at the end of the meeting for 15 minutes. So I'm an eye doctor and I've been doing some virtual seeing patients. So the patients go through all the testing with the tech. Everything's recorded and I see everything. And as soon as they finish all the testing, I look at my computer, I look at everything, and I see where it's at. I come on with the patient. Have a video call with a patient, say, this is what's going on, this is what's happening, and then I go to the next patient. So I'm not gathering all the information. I'm not doing any of that. I'm only doing the part that I was trained to do, which is interpret the information. And the same thing with the CEO. They don't really need to be there while they're hashing back and forth what to do. They just
No.
need to know what the decision was or the choices of decisions and make a decision. That's so efficient.
It's definitely is. And also, if you think about like a CEO of the company size that I'm working with, an hour of his or her time is worth like $2,000. Then if you look at what you do and you think like, is this worth 2,000 an hour to do? Sit on in this meeting and listening to people discussing, or how can I best use my time, and how can other people do the stuff that I'm doing today that easily could be, maybe not easily, but pretty easy be transferred to another person. And I could be okay with that. 80% of the quality of how I do it is good enough. There's a good book, a great book by Dan Sullivan about it's called Who Not How. So whenever you get a new task or something, you should the first you th should think about is who can do it, not how shall I solve it. That's it's a great book. And also within your management team, you might be like really good at certain thing as a CEO, but other things you find boring, or I don't know how to do this. And then you have your CFO, and he might be thinking like, this is the best thing to do in the whole world. And you think, but this is something for the CEO to do. But no, you can actually say to the CFO, would you like to do this? Yes, I would love to do this. And then you get a motivated person that does it instead of you doing a poor job, taking, oh, procrastinating on it, and having to do it. So there are so many different things you can change, and so you can actually create a CEO role for yourself that you would love, instead of doing a lot of things that you think you should do just because you are a CEO.
Right. And we can be so much more creative when we're doing things we love to do. I mean, it's just fun. It's like play. It's like play when you can do that. But when you're doing things, like you said, the things you don't want to do, it's just like, oh, the time just drags and you don't want to do it and it's terrible.
Yeah, and you sit there on Sunday afternoon and you know you have to do it before Monday, and you just, ah, oh! Yeah, instead of handing it over to someone that really loves doing just that.
Yeah. So during your bio and when you first was introducing yourself, you made a pretty bold claim about the income of the company going way up in 90 days sometimes. How do you do that? I know everybody wants to know.
Just it's not the figures that I use for those night. I say boost your bottom line by 499K delivered in 99 days. And just what I talked about, this 2,000 an hour CEO hour value. If you free up 8 hours a week, that's 16,000 a week. And if you multiply that by X number of weeks, and if you do that together with your C-suite people, and an hourly value of a C-suite person is $500. So just by freeing up time for these people are more than half a million in a year worth freeing up a value. But that is not directly boosting the bottom line by freeing up that value. But if they instead focus on doing strategic thinking and money-making activities, being out there selling more products and services, for example, increasing the quality of the products, streamlining their processes. That freed up the value of those hours will directly go back into the business and then produce that bottom line improvement. Maybe not within 99 days, but you will have a company set up to definitely increase the bottom line with more than $499 dollars K 499K in on a yearly basis. So that's my promise. So you won't have, like, after 99 days you can see, like, oh, 499K more on my bottom line, but you will have a company that is set up to bring more than that in within a couple of months or so. So yeah, and that's having to do with these three things that I talk about, like freeing up time, utilizing the company's potential, and also building a business model so that you can ease up the communication, get people aligned. And I also, for example, with the vision, you might have a vision for your company that you really like, but no one else understands. So maybe it's better, not maybe, but it's better that you change that vision to something that your people really feel motivated about. Maybe you get 80% out of what you want yourself, but if you have a buy-in for that vision and the overall company goals, that's much more worth than that you get your exact vision of what you want. Yes, so there are many things that we do during those 99 days. For example, asking the people, do you know about our vision? And doing surveys, for example, and getting people to participate in different actions, and also to look at what are our bottlenecks and issues, and what do we have, what kind of ideas do we have, and how, and together prioritize what's most important for us to change. And maybe you, as management, you think that we should change this, and you don't know what the root cause is. You don't know if you have momentum for it, but that's a feeling you have that something is wrong and we need to fix it. And instead, listen to your people. Maybe it's as easy, like, out in our cafeteria, the Cokes are they finish by Wednesday, and we won't get any new ones until next Monday. Can we just fix so we have Cokes enough so we can drink our beverage all week? Then we are much more satisfied. It's like, it could be like as simple as that. But there can also be a lot of different other stuff. But I usually say that if you help your people to fix their problems that they see that are really important to them, like the Coke machine, first and second, and maybe third, sometimes your problem has disappeared. You will get ripple effects in other areas you didn't know about because you start to listen to your people and fixing what they see. But then, as maybe third or fourth step, you can come and say, now I really want to fix this issue, so problem or area. How could we do that in the best possible way? Then you have people that know you listen to them, and you want to help them. Then they want to help you. Instead of just thinking like there's an expression, buhika, that's like bend over. Oh, sorry. No, Siri started to talk. Bend over, here it comes again. Like, You know, when management comes with another new thing, and you as people, you just think, okay, we'll just wait this one out too. Nothing will change, and then we can go back to work as usual. Yeah. So there are a lot of things to do, but also what's important in my work is that I'm not going in and taking over and doing all this stuff. I'm coaching the CEO and his or her management team to do it themselves. So after I've either coached them or we have done this program for 99 days, then they are what you say? They have the knowledge themselves on how to continue work so that they can build their companies better tomorrow together with their people and have the tools and techniques that I taught them how to use.
So if companies or people wanted to work with you, how do they contact you? Do you have a website? Are you on social media? How do they connect with you?
I have a website called beasmarterleader.com, and I'm also really active on LinkedIn. You find me there by my profile, Susanne Ekström, and both in my on my LinkedIn profile, but also on the website, you find a way to contact me or sign up for a coaching call with me to see if we are a good fit to work together.
Wonderful. Well, now I have a personal question. What gives
Yeah.
you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
Sorry, I didn't quite
Oh,
get.
yeah. What gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
Oh, that's a great question. Happiness and fulfillment. I had this talk with one of my CEO clients the other day, and we have been talking about an issue with one of his coworkers, and I coached him in how he could think and how he could set up this talk with him, the other person, how. What structure he could use and how we should prepare for that talk, and he called me the other day, and he was like so happy about that this discussion went so well, and they understood each other, and the other person didn't get offended because it was like a hard talk, and really saw that my client really wanted what was best for him, but still his behavior couldn't continue. So it was like a really hard talk to do, but he was so happy, and that is like the best like gift for me that I could ever get. Like I help someone and they go on and do it their way with my support, and they get this great result. And that's the best thing I think about my work, that I get to have this kind of both discussions but also results back. Yeah. And apart from that, also, of course, to see my son develop and starting to participate in the world again is also fantastic to watch all the new steps he's taking every day. And yeah, so that's two different aspects of two different answers to your question.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for being on the podcast today and for all your wisdom. And I've heard new things that I haven't heard before. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to want to get your help. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been a great time to talking to you.
So I have one last question before we finish. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Ooh. be responsible for yourself. Don't blame others for, or don't blame others, don't blame circumstances, and don't blame yourself for things that happen. Because it's so easy to say to yourself that, oh, I'm a failure, I did this so bad. Or just shove it away and say, no, that was, I don't have any clients because the market is like it is, or that person over there, he's an idiot because blah, 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 blah. So instead, there is only one person in your life that you can change and you can take responsibility for, and that's you. And also about all these stories that goes on up in your head. I don't know if I go off the question now, but I had this huge realization a couple of years ago that this person up here, she is not always or very seldom wants what's best for you. She wants what's best for you like thousands of years ago, when stress meant there's a lion behind you. And now today, stress means something different. But still, the person up here says to you that, oh, no, you don't need to do that. You can take it easy. And so, in that way, the brain hasn't evolved in the same way as we have in society. So it's still a pretty old brain. But for me, it's been like a giant shift in when I realized that if I see that something is not going so well, oh, I'm not good at calling prospects. Okay, no, it's not. I'm not good at calling prospects. It's like I'm not calling enough prospects, so I know how to do it properly. So what are the actions I can take so I can be more successful? And then it's easy. Call more prospects, try, test different things and see how it goes. And also, if I call one and they say, no, thank you, that call has no significance, or it doesn't affect your next call whatsoever. And thinking to yourself before you make a call that, ooh, that's a really successful CEO. Maybe he doesn't need my what I can offer because he seems so good and so successful anyway. I call the next person on the list. If you go in with that approach, then you won't be successful. Instead, you just blank yourself out, you pick up the phone, dial the number, and you talk. And you never know what the response is. And when you put up, when you hang up, then you go to the next phone on the list and you do the same. You blank yourself out, you dial the number, and you talk. It's in theory, like really easy, but that is something you need to practice on, like really getting out of your stories in your head. So instead, going like for 50 minutes and really think about, ooh, should I call that person? Instead, just pick up the phone and the call is over in 5 minutes, and you have 50 more minutes to call other people.
I love that advice. That's awesome because we all go through that whenever we have to call up anyone about anything, really. Well, thank you so much, Susan. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.